FTN Fast Break Podcast, Thursday, October 31st, 2024, episode 18. What's going on, everybody? Zach Graham, a.k.a. Kweisenberg DFS, joined once again with his name on the screen now. It is Adam Pfeiffer. Adam, and now you, sir, decked out in the Cavs gear. We saw you in the Bills gear last Thursday. How you feeling, man? I imagine it's pretty good.
Yeah, I mean, Bills look good. Cavs are undefeated. We should stop the basketball season now. Cavs are one seed. Let's just call it. But no, I'm happy to be back. Like I said last week, I am in the middle of doing football and basketball, and it's I love it. So yeah, and there was a lot to talk about. I looked at the show sheet, so I'm ready to roll.
Yeah, let's just go ahead and jump in here on episode 18. And let's talk. I want to start with two games from last night. Let's start in that Knicks and Miami game. We brought that up, Mike and I brought that up on Monday as one of our games to watch from Wednesday. It did not disappoint, especially if you are a fan of the New York Knicks. Karl-Anthony Towns, 44 points, 11 rebounds, 2 assists in the win over the Heat on Wednesday night. He was 17 of 24 from the field, Adam. 44 points on 24 shots. That's pretty elite. Knicks now back up to 2-2. And I think, if I'm a Knicks fan, I'm putting myself in those shoes. 2-2 with the early season schedule is not bad, right? Your losses are to Boston and Cleveland, the defending champs and the current one seed in the Eastern Conference, undefeated Cavs. And then you also have wins over the Pacers and the Heat, who are both teams that I think we consider playoff caliber teams. So, like, I think the larger the sample becomes on this New York team, I think the better the results are going to be. Like, just wait till they get to play the Wizards and the Hawks and the Blazers, right? Like,
and to be fair, like, we'll talk about Cleveland. Like, they've had back to back awesome wins, but they started the season just blowing out the Pistons, the Wizards, and the Raptors. Like, so the schedule happens that way. And yeah, it was good to see that from Cat too, because in the loss against Cleveland, he was like super passive. Like, he was hardly shooting the ball, and they need that because OG and Bridges are, you know, they're good players. They can get you 20 on occasions, right? But we know this is the iso-centric offense with Brunson, so, like, they need Cat to be aggressive, especially when the bench is Deuce McBride and that's it. So that was pretty encouraging to see. And, yeah, like, I didn't realize the schedule was that tough for them. I mean, all those teams you mentioned, it's the best team in the NBA in Boston. It's a top seed in the Eastern Conference in Cleveland. Pacers are, you know, the one of the elite offenses in the league.
Just beat Boston last night.
Right. So, like, and you know there's going to be at least a little bit of growing pains with the new pieces and everything. So, overall, like, and like, even that Cleveland game, like, they lost, wasn't a blowout or anything, and Brunson had an off-shooting game where he misses some shots he normally makes. So, I'm still worried about the bench. I'm still worried about some other things. And if the fit with everybody is perfect for them to be as good as we thought they might be. But yeah, I mean, 2-2 after that, the Boston game was kind of like a welcome to the season type thing. But I think they're fine. Yeah. I think we'll talk about probably Cleveland and Orlando. Like, you can make the case that they've made the jump to, like, the second and third best teams in the Eastern Conference. I don't think that's an overreaction, but I also don't think it's crazy. I don't think it's also an overreaction to say, no, it's probably still New York. I don't think that's crazy either, just based off the schedule they've had, and they'll get a little bit healthier with Mitch Rob, and I think they'll be fine.
And some things don't change, right? We've already got Josh Hart the last two games, game time decisions. So,
and, like, when I saw he was, like, when he was questionable against Cleveland, I said, if he's out, Cleveland's winning, because Josh Hart destroys Cleveland, and he had a monster game. so, yeah, like, I think they'll be fine. I'm a little bit higher on Cleveland, obviously, and I think Orlando's legit. So, like, but I also think, like I said, if you put them still two behind Boston, I don't think it's outlandish at all.
Yeah.
Especially with some of these teams in the East that are just, like, kind of falling apart before our eyes with Philadelphia and Milwaukee. Like, so obviously, like, we know I'm in the PA area. All my friends are Sixers fans, and they were stoked for this Tobias game.
Yeah.
And I told them, like, okay, whatever. Like, I didn't watch it. I didn't know he got booed every time he touched the ball. I thought that was a little much.
Yeah, just a little.
And then I go back, And I look, and the Sixers, I know they're missing guys, right? But 79 mm-hmm. points with like 4 minutes left in the fourth quarter against the Pistons is kind of crazy.
Yep. They might be the only ones down worse than I am talking about my Spurs. And we are going to carve out a couple minutes here because this is a big story Wednesday night into Thursday morning in the NBA world. Oklahoma City demolishes the Spurs, holds Victor Wembanyama to a new career low, just 6 points, 1 of 5 from the floor in his 27 minutes here. Adam did not shoot in the second half.
That's crazy. And so,
yeah, I just wanted to talk about just for a couple seconds about, or a couple minutes maybe, about my early season impressions watching this team every single play so far through the four game, right? I think I missed 2 games of the 82 last year.
It's pathetic.
I don't know what is going on offensively with this team from a coaching perspective. And it takes a lot for me to start questioning who I think is the greatest coach of all time in Greg Popovich. Certainly, inarguably, a top five coach all time in the league. But, like, this offense has been stagnant. It has been a lot of five out, not a lot of actions, a lot of standing and watching your teammates. And the lack of variety is just, it's astoundingly bad to me at this point. It leaves me scratching my head. Now, is it going to help to get Devin Vassell back next week, right? Get a second guy onto this roster that can create his own shot? Yes. But if they continue to play this very stagnant style of offense and kind of just your turn, my turn, Adam, I'm tired of watching Harrison Barnes try to ISO guys on the wing. It does not work consistently enough to stick in games with any of these teams that the Spurs are going to need to compete against, or be more competitive rather against, right? The beginning of the season schedule hasn't exactly been easy, right? You open up at Dallas, the defending champions of the Western Conference. Then you play 2 games at home against a Houston team that is very tenacious on defense, and there's a lot of bad blood between those two teams. Then you get Oklahoma City on the road on Wednesday night. So, like, the Spurs were 13.5-point dogs in that one. I do think they covered there. But, again, that doesn't have any bearing on what the actual basketball looks like. And it looks atrocious on the offensive end. And Victor himself, too, when he's gotten the touches, which I think have been too few, has not been nearly as aggressive offensively as he was really throughout last season, but especially over the last 2-3 months after the All-Star break when we saw him just take off. And that's why we had all the hype around him potentially being, you know, an MVP sleeper, most improved, this and that. Like, and he's not even, if the season ended today, like you want to do with your 5-0 Cavs, Victor Wembanyama is not the defensive player of the year. So again, probably an overreaction. Let me see the next 4 or 5 games on top of the 4 that we've already seen, because they get Utah on the road tonight, second end of a back-to-back on Thursday, right? To me, I was telling you this before we hit record, nothing is truly a must. Of course, mathematically in the first 2 weeks of the season, but from a vibe standpoint around the San Antonio team that a lot of people had, you know, getting up into maybe into that 10 range to try to compete for a play-in, they're not, if they play like this, they're not going to get anywhere close to that. So to me, as a Spurs fan and any interested party, San Antonio has to win this game against the lowly Jazz tonight, a team that is very much tanking, a team that is shorthanded on that side as well. Like, you got Minnesota coming to town on Saturday, so this is just a brief respite, a brief reprieve from the Spurs' tough opening season schedule. And overall, man, it's not going to get any easier in the long run because you're in the Western Conference. Utah and Portland are really the only teams you would think would be worse from a projection standpoint than San Antonio. Everything else, they would have to earn. So I got a big red flag up for San Antonio right now, man. And you know me, it takes a lot for me to talk down on my favorite team.
Yeah, you know I'm really high on Devin Vassell, so getting him back will be huge. I also think, like, the excitement for Chris Paul wasn't like, oh, they're going to be this awesome, you know, top 10 style offense. Right. But it was just mostly for Wemby to have that veteran point guard to get him the ball. But teams are kind of defending the pick and roll with them when they run it. It's just like you don't defend it the same when it's this version of Chris Paul at this age. Like, you can really be aggressive and not worry about him, you know, running past you. And, like, Wemby's obviously a capable three-point shooter, but he's not obviously at this point of his career somebody you just say, you know, you can't go under screens against Wemby. Right. Like, you can get away with it. So it's a little bit, like I would like to see this team, and, like, obviously Chris Paul is one of the greatest point guards of all time, and it won't be this year, but like there was reasons there was rumors about Trae Young and Darius Garland on this team. That would be like the pairing you would want with Wemby. Now Garland's healthy, so you guys can respectfully shove it.
Yeah.
But like that's what I want to see at some point. Now obviously like this move for Chris Paul wasn't in any way to, you know, go for the championship, but
it's
to help Wemby and these young guys. And I do think there's going to be a stretch where it's going to be awesome for Wemby and Chris Paul is going to be good. But there's also stretches, especially like you mentioned, against these elite defensive teams like the Thunder, who like lead the NBA in forcing turnovers and deflections, are ridiculous. And then Dallas is an elite defensive team as well. So it's not concerning. It's just like, especially in your shoes, it's frustrating because Wemby was so good last year and he has the trajectory of being one of the five best players on the planet. And it hasn't happened yet for this sophomore season. It's going to happen. We all know that. But I haven't admittedly watched as much of the Spurs, obviously, as you have. But I just also think there's still some personnel issues. Get Devin Vassell back. And they don't have a ton of like athleticism around Wemby either.
Right. Well, and you've got Keldon Johnson in a bench role now.
Right.
He dropped a ton of weight in the offseason. So some of that physicality. Another thing too, man, like Jeremy Sochan has been great so far this year. But the fact that we're sitting here over a week into the season and saying Jeremy Sochan has been the Spurs' best player, right, is indicative of the 1-3 start that they've had. And I'll say, man, as again, somebody who's watched every single play so far this year, they didn't deserve the one win that they had. They got out to a huge lead. They blew it in the waning moments. Jalen Green went off in that fourth quarter last Saturday, and they snuck out a win. So, again, I'm really watching with the eyes of my fandom intensely tonight on this Utah game, because if they lose this one, again, they play Houston again next week after they play Minnesota.
Would you still feel like – like, obviously, it'd be frustrating if they lost to a team like Utah, but like, say they lose a close game and Wemby looks like Wemby. You still kind of, and the offense looks a little bit less, you know, stagnant. You still at least a little bit happier because, like, you want at this point the Spurs to try to make that play in just this, because that's how I was with the Cavs when they first, the year before they got Mitchell, when they made the play. And I was like, I don't expect Cleveland to go anywhere, but like, get the play in, get that experience of playoff atmosphere. And then I think that's kind of helped him over the years. Like, you would like that for Wemby. But I would also probably want to see Wemby have one of those 28, 14, 8, 6, and 4 games.
Well, and, like, I also think if you see kind of that traditional Wemby game, Wemby explosion here tonight, they don't lose this
game.
Yeah, the defense has been fine, in my opinion. Like, against Oklahoma City, they were really packing the paint and daring OKC to beat them from three. And credit to the Thunder, right? You get, like, 6 threes from Lou Dort. Kaysen Wallace is out there knocking down threes.
Kind of an interesting theory against a team that shoots as many threes as they do. It's like them and Boston that shoot so many threes, but
yeah. I mean, to me, I think they were getting the right players, right? You don't want Isaiah Joe shooting open threes, but the right players were taking more threes than they normally do, and they stepped up and knocked them down.
But also Shea, like, you would rather have Shea at the 3-point line than getting the free throw line as much as he does.
Yeah,
so.
Absolutely. Well, and so you've also, of course, referenced the Cavs. We talked about your outfit coming onto the pod.
This was not planned, by the way. Right. Like, I just put it on and then realized I had the hat to match. So,
Well, it looks sharp, man. As sharp as your favorite team has, because Oklahoma City, the lone undefeated team in the West. We already mentioned Cleveland, 5-0, top of the East right now. So, again, as much as I've watched the Spurs, you're tuning into these Cavs games. I know you had to miss the majority of the game. The win, big win against the Lakers last night. The one thing I'll say, it was nice to see the Cavs recognize both Bron and Bronny before the game, kind of in by the locker room. They had pictures from the 2016 championship, Bronny on the stage with the team back then. But from a basketball standpoint, what are you seeing from your favorite team here? 5-0, they've got some big wins already under their belt, in addition to some wins that they should take care of business in. But 5-0, it literally cannot have gone better so far for Cleveland.
Yeah, it's really exciting because it's not just like they're winning games and Donovan Mitchell's going for 40. Like, he hasn't even had to have that huge game yet. That's probably what I'm most excited about. Darius Garland, he had the broken jaw last year. I follow a lot of the Cavs beat reporters and people that cover the Cavs for like content reasons. And they do an awesome job. And every single game last year, somebody was tweeting, stop hitting Darius Garland in the face, because he got hit in the face every game. And he talked about how, like, it was tough for him to kind of deal with that after, you know, the broken jaw and stuff. And in the playoffs, he had like the one good game in the playoff series against New York 2 years ago when they got bounced. But like, there had been times in the Orlando series last year where Mitchell had to carry because Garland was really, really passive. And Garland's looked amazing this year. And if he's playing like this, and Mobley, we talked about last week how more aggressive he's been. He's grabbing defensive rebounds and pushing the ball, you know, a la Bam Adebayo, which I love to see. I think they can. I think they're, the hype is warranted for them to be the second best team in the East. And it does parallel with what's happening with Milwaukee and Philadelphia. But you look at it, what is Mitchell? A top 12 player at worst, probably? Like, yeah. maybe say like Paolo's maybe past 15, him, maybe push him. Yeah, he's top 15 at worst. And he hasn't had to have that 45-point game yet. Mm-hmm. Those will happen. Mobley's looked great. Jared Allen is the most consistent, maybe most underrated center in the league. He doesn't do anything wrong. And Mobley's shooting more threes. We knew Kenny Atkinson was going to ask him of that. And he's stepping into threes. He's not even hesitating. That's all I can ask for. Max Strus will be back. Dean Wade's giving them great minutes as a starter. They still have Isaac Okoro giving them. His minutes have come down, but he's still playing great defense when he's out there. I just think it's going to come down to Darius Garland and Mobley, because Allen and Mitchell, we know what we're getting. We know how good the offense was when it was those two that were healthy, right, last year. But if Garland's playing like this, and in that New York game where Garland went off, Mitchell kind of said, you know what, there's always questions of the fit with Cleveland of Mobley and Allen and Mitchell and Garland. Yeah. But with Mitchell and Garland, it's not a point where Mitchell's like, he's obviously going to be a high usage player, but he's not like ball dominant to where like Garland has to go sit in the corner. Like, he wants Garland to be aggressive. He's talked about it. So yeah, man. And defensively, we know they're going to be elite with Mobley. I'm excited for the Orlando game that's coming up, because two elite defensive teams, two teams that can at times struggle shooting, and the playoff matchup last year was pretty fun. I think the Cavs and the Magic, for that matter, are legit. I think right now they should be viewed as two top four teams in the Eastern Conference. And yeah, man, I just think this is the year where you finally – the other thing, too, is the continuity is still there. Like, they still have the same roster that they've had for the most part.
Yeah.
The only change has been the head coach, but everything I've seen from Kenny Atkinson in terms of getting the most out of Mobley, rotations, adjustments, it's been great. So I'm stoked. You know, I don't think they'll go 82-0, but we'll see. I don't know, man.
Well, I think, like, you mentioned Coach Atkinson, right? Like, that was a pretty exciting hire, I think, from what we can remember, what he did with some of those Brooklyn Nets teams.
Brooke Lopez, career-high threes his first year with Kenny Atkinson. I expect the same from Mobley.
Exactly. Well, and, like, right? Names like Timotei Luwawu-Cabarrot, right? Only relevant to us because of those Kenny Atkinson teams, coached teams, and Evan Mobley, to your point. Like, that is from the lesser amount of Cavs possessions that I've watched so far this year. Like, you can see it in the stats as much as you can see it in the eye test, right? Through his first five games, career high in points, just over 19, career high in blocks, career high in steals, shooting 50% from three on 1.6 attempts per game, which would be a career high in terms of his three-point volume. And he's playing about a minute and a half less on average than he did last year, so the arrow is certainly pointing upwards for this team. I don't think that 5-0 is a mirage. Again, with you, right? Like, probably not 82-0. Maybe. We'll see. But, like,
and it's encouraging, too. Like, I think that New York game is what real, because those are types of games they lose last year or the year before. Mm-hmm. Like, close games on the road against a physical team. Rebounding has always been a problem for them with some of those physical teams. Obviously, they didn't have Mitchell Robinson. But, like, I just think Mobley has made it a mission to just take even more of a step forward.
Yeah.
And that was always the concern with
to make this work, right?
Yeah. Like, this, because that was always the concern, like, with people. Like, the Cavs ceiling is capped if Evan Mobley doesn't score more. Yeah. I'm like, yes and no. But right now, I don't see, like, obviously they're not going to be an elite 3-point shooting team, but right now I don't see many weaknesses on this team. Well, and it's going to come down to Garland and Mobley. We know what Mitchell's going to give you. We know what J.A. is going to give you. And everything we've seen from Garland and Mobley has been phenomenal.
Well, does it feel like to you, because it does to me, that, like, this season is the last chance, so to speak, for this core group, because we made the coaching change in the offseason, right? So then if we don't get to, like, a conference finals appearance.
Yeah, I think if they go to the ECF, like, and I don't even think necessarily – any changes have to happen if they get bounced in the second round again.
Okay.
It's possible, especially if in those playoff games, it's back to Mitchell just having to carry the load. Yeah. But I think
it's easier. It's been easier for opponents to scheme against the exactly. Mobley Allen pairing in those playoffs.
Right. And if Mobley just keeps shooting like two and a half threes per game and he can shoot like 34%, it's fine. I'm cool with that.
Well, we'll keep an eye on the Cavs, of course, here on the Fast Break. Some other quick hitters in terms of our reactions from the first 10 days. I don't want to do like the overreactions because I think we get plenty of that elsewhere, but I think some notable things to discuss on either end of the standings spectrum here, Adam. Again, we're only 4 or 5 games in for some of these teams, but the Milwaukee Bucks, 1-3, lost to Boston.
I'm not overreacting. They stink.
Yeah, it is really bad right now. And again, for a team that still has those title aspirations, now we're getting, I think a tweet from Sleeper Hoops this morning saying that Giannis could potentially try to force his way out of Milwaukee if this year does not go well. I wouldn't blame him for that because, again, like if this doesn't work, Dame is what, 34, 35, Chris Middleton. If it doesn't work this year, that probably is a good indicator that Middleton was not able to recover his previous form. And like one of those three losses is to Boston.
They have zero. I don't think this is hyperbole. I think they have legitimately zero chance to win a championship.
Zero.
I think they have zero chance.
Okay.
I don't think
it's much higher than that, but I don't know if I can give them zero.
maybe it's a little disrespectful. I just think the way. So what was the problem for them last year? Defensively, at least their backcourt defense was terrible, mm-hmm. and it's they obviously made some moves. You know, Gary Trent. Like nobody was going to replace Jrue Holiday. They've obviously been missing that, but that's a risky run when you make that move. And you look, I mean, Cam Thomas, Dennis Schroeder, like the Bulls guards, they are lighting this backcourt defense up. Last year, they allowed the third most points per possession to pick-and-roll ball handlers. This year, it's easily the most at 1.10 points per possession. It's dreadful. Like, you cannot be losing games to the Brooklyn Nets. Mm-hmm. Cam Thomas is a bucket. He'll score. But, like, they're laughably bad with their perimeter defense against
they're trying
point
to
guards.
Lose.
Right, that's what I'm saying. Like, you can't lose those games. And then I still have questions about the Giannis and Dame pairing because they're not really running a lot of pick-and-roll concepts of those two.
Yeah.
Like and Dame's looked better this year. It's just Middleton hasn't been healthy in like 2 years. Brolo, old. Like the coaching's bad. They missed on draft picks. Like I think they are kind of screwed.
I mean, look, man. I know it wasn't perfect with the previous coach, but I cannot get over from an outsider's perspective looking in that they fired a guy who was 30-13. And now Doc Rivers is, I believe, 19-23 in his tenure since taking over for Coach Griffin. Like maybe Giannis wasn't the happiest with Coach Griffin there, but guess what, man, y'all were winning like 30-13. We fired a coach that won damn near 70% of his games. And now we're well under 500 with the new guy. So again, I can't get to the point where they have zero title shot yet because they still do have Giannis, who is a top five player, and that may be putting it lightly, but it does not look great. But then on the other side, in terms of surprises, and maybe the Bucks aren't a big surprise to folks, but I think we could all agree that 4-1 Golden State Warriors is a little bit eyebrow raising here through the first couple of weeks, especially when you think about the idea that they have not had Steph Curry for the last two games. De'Anthony Melton's been out. Andrew Wiggins has been out. Right, this is a team that is kind of running on fumes already in terms of their overall health, but they're the highest scoring team in the West, 119.8 points per game. They have the largest point differential in the league at plus 24.4. Maybe some of that is a friendly schedule to start this year, Adam, because their four wins, Portland, Utah, and twice over a Pelicans team that is also shorthanded. But still, 4-1 is 4-1. You're putting up nearly 120 points per game. And again, the defense is there too. Even if it's the worst teams in the league, you still got to go out and do the job. And the Warriors have so far. Shout out to Draymond for having a big game last night. He doesn't do that a ton without Steph Curry. The Warriors are fighting, man. And I'll give Coach Kerr some credit. I was scratching my head when he moved Jonathan Kuminga to the bench the other night as soon as Steph Curry went out. But they beat the Pelicans twice. And I didn't think they would beat them either time. So Golden State 4-1. what have you seen out of them?
Yeah, I just think obviously like they're going to probably have a rough stretch without Steph at some point coming up here. But like we talked about it, I think last week, like they have, and we've seen it already, they have ways to have versatile and bunch of different lineup combinations. You know, I Pods had a good game the other day. I like the pieces they have. I think D'Anthony Melton, when he's healthy, is going to be good for them too. But man, like coming up, Houston, we'll see. Then you have Washington, that should be a win. Then you have Boston, Cleveland, OKC. Like maybe the three best teams in basketball right there in a three-game stretch. That's tough. Dallas right after that. Memphis. The Clippers are playing decent ball right now. So it's going to get tough for them. But overall, like, they might be actually, as weird as it sounds, like, they're not going to be a good team without Steph. But they might be more equipped to at least be okay with the pieces they added without Steph than they were last year.
Yeah, maybe a little bit more scrappy than it would initially appear without somebody like Steph. Again, I think that does normalize. But if this guy doesn't normalize that I want to talk about next, while also giving myself a little pat on the back for calling this out 3 weeks ago during the preseason, rookie Ryan Dunn there in Phoenix, dude. Adam, has been fantastic. I mean, right, much was made about this guy during draft season, during summer league, and even coming into the preseason about his shooting ability or lack thereof, right? Because at Virginia last season, only shot one three-point attempt per game in 28 minutes a game, 34 starts for Virginia. He shot 20% from three on one attempt per game. Through four games and a start here, just about 15 minutes a game with the Suns in the regular season, Adam, 4 3-point attempts per game, 43.8% from beyond the arc. We know what this kid brings on the defensive side of the ball. That's what I was kind of raving about after that preseason game 3 or 4 weeks ago that I watched between the Suns and the Nuggets. The fact that he is doing this in the regular season, if this continues anywhere near, again, kind of like what you said about Evan Mobley, right? If Ryan Dunn can get out there and shoot 3 or 4 3-point attempts per game and be even in the mid-30s, this is a huge win personnel-wise for the Suns, a team that was hurting for defense on the wing. I love watching this kid so far, man. And I got to be honest, I'm a little bit jealous.
So the Suns have kind of made moves that the Bucks haven't, like with some of the pieces around their veterans. Tyus Jones, you know how I feel about Tyus Jones.
Yeah.
For the longest time, he was best backup point guard in the league, obviously starting. And he's doing what he's done. Assist turnover ratio is elite. He's led the league in assist turnover ratio for like 3 years now. And then you have Ryan Dunn come in and give you that perimeter defense. Did you see what he did to LeBron James the other day?
I did not, no.
He, towards down the stretch of that game, LeBron had like barely... Dude, LeBron... You know that streak of LeBron scoring 10 plus points? Like, he almost didn't get that streak. He
almost didn't. Yeah, yeah.
And Ryan Dunn matched up against LeBron for, like, 3.5 minutes total in that game. LeBron was 0 for 4 from the field, 2 turnovers. He held him to a shot clock violation. Like, physical. Like, to be a rookie and be physical with LeBron James, even at this stage of his career, is insane. Like, if you just search, like, Ryan Dunn, LeBron James, you'll see that rep towards the end of the shot clock in that game. Yeah. Insane. I like everything I've seen from the Suns. Like, obviously, they're going to be able to score. Defensively, they should be better with, and Ryan Dunn's been a huge part of that. And then Tyus Jones give them that stable, consistent pass first, won't turn the ball over point guard that you need on a team with Devin Booker and Kevin Durant. So the Suns are definitely a team that I almost put in stock up for today's episode, but I knew we were talking about Ryan Dunn. So yeah, everything looks great. They are like, they're a team that you kind of didn't know where to put in the Western Conference standings earlier before the season started. Like, should they be top three? Should they be like six? Right now, I think they very easily should be in that top three. Obviously, with OKC, I think Dallas should be in there. I think the Suns should be third.
Yeah, I mean, you get them that start against the Mavericks over the weekend, I believe, right? 21 minutes in that game. Struggled a little bit with
guarded Luka for about 5.5 minutes in that game.
Exactly. That's the one that I watched and that I just was kind of like the confirmation bias. Okay, like, this kid has it.
Dude, he's guarded to start his NBA career.
He's going to guard the best player every game.
LeBron, Luka, Harden. I think it was like a minute for Kyrie in that same game with Luka, obviously. Like,
yep.
And just no fear. Just right, like... To go right at LeBron James like that is super impressive to me.
Yep. So that's somebody to keep our eye on for sure. Let's talk about some games that we have our eyes on this weekend. I know I talked about my Spurs fandom and watching Jazz Spurs very closely tonight, but to me, the game of the night tonight, Adam, Houston at Dallas, kind of the other side of this Texas triangle, the rivalry that we've got down here in the Lone Star State. I'm excited to see kind of this upstart, kind of a little bit of nasty there in Houston with their defensive acumen go up against this high-powered offense, obviously a very solid defense on the Dallas side as well. And then on Friday, Denver at Minnesota, we've got a rematch of that Western Conference semifinal series. But there's another rematch of an Eastern Conference semifinal series. Two teams that we talked about earlier, right? Cavs hosting the Magic. My hot take on the fast break before we started the season was that the Magic would be the two seed in the East. And you mentioned that these teams could be competing for those top three spots. So I imagine you have your eye on that one as well.
Mobley-Paolo matchup. Yeah. It's going to be fun.
Absolutely.
Also, with the Minnesota game, I did want to talk about Minnesota too.
Sure.
You think Minnesota wishes they had anybody that could shoot threes the way Minnesota's shooting threes right now based off volume? Have you seen what Ant-Man's doing this year?
Yep.
Dude, he is attempting, I think it's 13 per game.
Yep.
Like, and
up from like 8 last year, I think. Maybe in the
set. He's only at, like, we know Anthony Edwards is maybe the best slashing guard in the NBA, right? Like, he's only averaging like 5 shot attempts per game off drives. It's way down. I think a lot of that's because, you know, the spacing is going to be weird with Rudy, but then teams are just not defending Julius Randle the same as they're defending Cat. Like, Julius Randle, volume wise, will shoot as many threes as Cat, maybe even more sometimes. But efficiency, it's not even close, obviously. So teams aren't even like, there was a play where Jakob Poeltl was not even guarding Julius Randle, just doubling Anthony Edwards, and it ended up being a turnover. Like, Ant is, he might win the scoring title this year.
Yeah.
Is he averaging right now 30?
Yeah, he's been fantastic. And we talked about actually on the Daily Dime, I want to say yesterday, might have been Tuesday, talking about that Anthony Edwards 3-point attempt stat and saying, oh, this can't keep up. Like, he's not going to average 13 for the year. And he still probably comes in under that number, but it did not slow down early this week. Over the weekend, Sacramento at Toronto, right? So we've got another DeMar DeRozan returning to Toronto for the season. It's the one time he will be there. So I've got my eyes on that just from a sentimental perspective. I'm a big DeRozan fan. But then I think also, like, from a real basketball standpoint, Cleveland at Milwaukee, second end of a back-to-back for the Cavs coming off.
Good luck with their perimeter defense against Mitchell and Garland. Have fun.
Yeah, right? But, I mean, coming off, right, second end of a back-to-back, and I expect that matchup against the Cavs the night before to be very physically demanding on them. So I've got my eye on that one. Then just three games on Saturday, but I think Magic at Mavericks is clearly the game to watch from a real hoops perspective on Sunday. If you need to get a little basketball in your life, you know, outside of all the NFL games we'll be paying attention to.
Yeah, I think we've gotten to the point now, and we probably were there at some point last season where Paolo has entered the discussion of just must watch. Like, if he's on, you just put him on. He is, I don't know, man. He at times he looks like rookie second year LeBron in Cleveland. He really does.
Yep. When you see from those games to watch, right, over the next four nights, we've got Dallas in there twice, we've got the Magic in there twice, and the Cavs in there.
And the
twice,
Magic, so. It's so funny because they're not, like, pace-wise, offense-wise, they're not this, like, unbelievably fun team to watch, but they have Paolo, they have Franz, and some of their young, like, Anthony Black's played really well. Like, they're tough.
Anthony Black? How about Jalen Suggs and the way he's been shooting the three ball this year? Like, that's way more surprising to me than Anthony Edwards, because again, it's more about the volume right now, right? Suggs, it's the volume and the efficiency that is there. And as a guy who just signed that extension coming into the season, right? Sometimes you can see a little bit of a drop off with the guy that just secured the bag. Quite the contrary here so far for Jalen Suggs. Let's close out episode 18 as we normally do with a little stock up, stock down here, Adam. Let's start with the stock down. We like to end on the positives. I'll let you go first. What's your stock down here to close out the second week of the regular season?
It's got to be Denver. It's really concerning. And I tried to kind of overlook it and just give Jokic the benefit of the doubt of being the best player on the planet. And I still think he is. But man, like, what was it? Last week, I watched that Thunder game. And Chet's doing a good job one-on-one against Jokic. But then they're obviously just doubling him almost every possession, and just nobody's making them pay. And this is like the worst three-point shooting team in the league. It's hard to win championships being just dreadful from three. Michael Porter Jr. has been bad to start season. They're relying way more on Christian Brown than they probably want to. The bench is, I think, the second worst in scoring and points per game. And then Russell Westbrook's been a disaster. Like, their net rating with him on the floor is like minus 30. Mm-hmm. Like, it's brutal. Their turnover rate's up when he's on the floor. Clearly not giving you anything shooting the ball wise. I always thought it was weird that, because Jokic like wanted him, right? Like he said that he wanted him, and that fit just didn't make sense to me ever. This is a team as well, like kind of like Milwaukee, but in the West, like, I don't know. I don't see how they win a championship. I know Jokic and Jamal Murray is going to have stretches where he's unstoppable, but they're really bad.
I mean, dude, they've had to go to overtime for the two wins against the Raptors and the Nets.
Yeah.
Like, those are two teams that are tanking. So, again, like,
those and we're seeing Jokic score more. Like, he's having to drop 40.
Yeah. Well, and we know, like, those teams, right, that are tanking are not explicitly, the coaches and the players are not going out there trying to lose, but they're set up to lose in the long run. So, the fact that, like you mentioned, the load that Jokic has had to carry so far, I will give Russ some credit because in that Brooklyn game, he did look a lot better. He was a net neutral there in terms of his plus minus. He did get to the line 10 times, made all 10 of his free throws. 5 of 12 from the field is pretty Russell Westbrook to me, but 22 points, 5 assists, a rebound and a steal. Just one turnover in those 21 minutes. Like, that's the Russ they need if they have any hope of competing for one of those top three spots in the West. Like, over these first 2 weeks, it's really tough to say that the Nuggets are going to be better, that they have much of a chance to be better than the Thunder, than the Wolves. Like, how about the Lakers, the Suns, right? Like, you start naming these teams and the Nuggets keep falling down and down and down. And like, there's only 6 guaranteed playoff spots anymore. So obviously we're not the first ones to bring up the struggles of the Denver Nuggets, but even with 2 wins in a row, I don't think we're any more confident in them than we were going into those games, given the game script, how they played out against Toronto and Brooklyn.
Are you more concerned about them or Milwaukee?
It's probably Milwaukee because we've seen Milwaukee kind of, for lack of a better term, fail with Giannis. We've seen what Jokic can do with a team that doesn't have Jamal Murray, a team that doesn't have an Aaron Gordon or an MPJ, right? Shorthanded Nuggets can still compete with almost anybody. But again, you've lost KCP, you've lost Bruce Brown over the last 2 off seasons, and like, now we're replacing him with Christian Brown and Julian Strother, and right, Hunter Tyson's not even in this rotation, but like, there's just not a lot behind these guys. So I would still say I'm slightly more confident in Denver than Milwaukee, but neither team in a great spot right now. With my stock down here, it's just injuries overall, Adam. Like, we hate to see it. It provides some value in the DFS games that we play every night. But like, from a real basketball standpoint, it is like, the injuries are never going to fully stop. But we already have Brandon Miller, Bogdan Bogdanovic, Scottie Barnes, Steph Curry, DeJounte Murray out for extended periods of time, in addition to coming into the season with no Embiid, Paul George, Kawhi, Chris Middleton, right? Last night, we see Marcus Smart, Desmond Bane leave early for Memphis. So, like, for me, enough. Give us a reprieve. 1 week, no major injuries, and then we can turn that faucet back on. But, like, slow down. Andrew Nembhard goes out randomly last night with knee tendonitis after playing 5 or 6 minutes. Like, I don't know if it's that we're not playing enough in the preseason, or maybe some of these guys are playing too much, where they play summer league and they play pro-am. Some of them
are just, like, weird that will happen. Like, Scottie Barnes was what, an eye?
Right. I think orbital fracture, like DeJounte fractures his hand at the end of the first game of the season.
It's
like,
just
those things will happen, but it's really stacking up.
Right. For sure. You don't want to see it.
Let's close it out with our stock ups for the day. What do you got here to close out episode 18? What's your stock up?
Yeah, they've lost 2 straight, but I'm going with JJ Redick and Anthony Davis in particular with the LA Lakers. I feel like going into LeBron's tenure with LA, he talked about as much, and we kind of knew, like, this team would probably be at its best if their offense was running through Anthony Davis. And obviously they won the championship in the bubble, and that's probably when Anthony Davis last looked this good. Like, he's always been great, but this good? I mean, the usage rate and the touches per game are the highest they've been since he's joined the team. Redick has clearly made it a point to play through him more. He's more aggressive on drives. His drives per game are the highest they've been in a couple years. He looks unstoppable. LeBron's still going to be LeBron. Like, they almost won that game against the Suns, and LeBron had just an uncharacteristically bad game. Rui looks pretty good. So I think just overall, Redick and Anthony Davis in particular, they have been awesome for this team. Again, I know they lost two straight, but look, you're not going to win against the Cavs very often, right? So, but no, I just liked a lot from what I've seen from them so far. And I still think there's room to grow with that team with some of the young players, maybe some moves to be made down the line. But right now, it's hard to have five players that are playing better than Anthony Davis right now.
Yeah, I'm with it. I like that one. The one for me here today, they're 2-2. They just got two wins over the Atlanta Hawks, a shorthanded Atlanta Hawks. But wins nonetheless for the Wizards. My stock up is Bilal Coulibaly, second-year man, of course, out of France. Kind of a meteoric rise as Victor Wembanyama's teammate in their final year over there in France. Gets drafted in the top 10, somewhat surprisingly, last year by the Wizards. Again, I've given the Wizards in the offseason a lot of credit for their draft pick of Bub Carrington. I think that's going to work out, but I think we got to give them credit here for Coulibaly. I don't think that these numbers sustain themselves, but the early returns on his sophomore season here are fantastic. Up over 10 points per game, nearly 19 points a game through his four appearances, all of them being starts. Again, he only started about a quarter of his appearances last season. He's shooting 59% from the field, 42 from three on 4.8 attempts per game. That is up from 2.9 and 34.6% respectively last season. Rebounds are up, assists are up, steals are up, turnovers up a little bit too. But that comes with the additional usage and his efficiency, his longevity, right? Being able to go out there and play 30s in minutes night after night here with this Wizards team. I think Bilal Coulibaly is turning into a big win here, I think, for the Wizards, somebody that I think they're going to try to keep around for a long time to come. And hopefully for those Washington fans, I think, you know, the eight that are out there in this world are probably looking to this future core of Alex Sarr, Coulibaly, Bub Carrington, and thinking, maybe we got something going here over the next 4 or 5 years. I've been really excited to watch a lot of these young guys, and Coulibaly fits the bill. I'm taking unders on his fantasy point props. He's blowing past that in a half. He just looks like a new player this year. And keep in mind, this guy won't be 21 until after Summer League next July.
That's crazy.
He's super young. Coulibaly, watch out for him, man. Big time stock up.
Yeah, and that's what the season's all about for Washington, right? Getting more reps and just more opportunities for these young guys. And I think Kyle Kuzma's banged up right now too, so just more opportunities going his way. I think you got to be obviously a diehard basketball fan to want to tune into Washington's games this year, but he's, you know, if he's giving you a reason why, that's great for them.
Absolutely. Well, that'll do it for us here on episode 18 of the Fast Break. Adam, before we get out of here, I know we're heading in to another big week of NFL action. Talk to everybody kind of about that side of everything, podcasts, articles, whatever we've got going on.
Yeah, so every Thursday, so today if you're obviously watching this, I launch the weekly game-by-game preview where I spend about an hour going through all the games, so that's up. I also do a wide receiver cornerback matchup article on Thursdays, and Friday I do a stats to know article where I use our advanced stats hub at ftnfantasy.com, which is awesome. And I go through five of my favorite stats, so you can check that out. And of course, everybody else's content, right? We have rankings updated all the time from myself, Jeff Ratcliffe, Jeremy Popolars, Chris Meany, Mike Randall, Scott Spratt. So ton of awesome stuff. And again, I keep kind of repeating this point, but this is the best time to be a sports fan. It's the best time to sign up at FTN Fantasy because we have everything.
Yep, couldn't agree more. I've been setting my season-long lineups with Adam's rankings. Of course, the composite between Scott and Jeff and Adam and everybody. Meany's in there, right? The wide receiver cornerback matchups article to me is a weekly must. So again, if you are an NFL fan, I think the majority of you listening to the Fast Break here today are, make sure you're checking out that football content that we've got here at ftnfantasy.com as well. That'll do it for us, everybody. I'm back with Mike on Monday, recapping the weekend that was here in the NBA. 15-game slate on Monday. Game starting every 15 minutes, Adam. Can't wait for that one. Enjoy your weekend, everybody. We'll do the same. We'll see you back here on Monday for another episode of the FTN Fast Break Podcast. Till then, he's Adam. I'm Zach. Goodbye. Thank you.